Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and we have a special opportunity today to cross to London and speak to two guests. We're speaking with Karen Woodall, who is a psychotherapist, a parenting coordinator, an assessor, an expert witness in the family courts, and a partner at the Family Separation Clinic. And then later in the program, we'll be speaking with her husband, Nick Woodall, who is a therapeutic mediator, a conciliator, and dispute resolution provider. And they have co-authored a number of books, including their latest, Understanding Parental Alienation, Learning to Cope, and Helping to Heal. Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
So, Karen, in the book, when you're talking about parental alienation, you in the main seem to stick with the description by Richard Gardner, who came up with a formulation in the late 1970s. Is that still, do you think, the best description of parental alienation?
Well, certainly from our perspective, the eight signs of alienation, which were first curated by Richard Gardner, are the doorway into understanding the child's predicament. The eight signs are really the only way that a child can use to signal to the outside world that they are suffering from psychological splitting, which is the underlying problem underneath parental alienation. So certainly for us, the doorway to understanding the child's predicament are the eight signs of alienation. And being aware of all the debates about different ways of conceptualizing the problem, for us, this is the clearest route. It helps us to be very clear about what's happening to the child.
Parental alienation was not included in DSM-5, which is the psychologist's Bible, and I know there was a lot of lobbying to try and get it included. Do you think it's important that it's not in the in the DSM-5?
Well, the issue about the DSM-5 is really that whilst the label parental alienation isn't in the DSM-5, the spirit of parental alienation is. So the key thing in the DSM-5 is that the child in relationship distress is included in the DSM-5. Now, the reality is that there's a lot of hoo-ha about the DSM, and people say that because the label isn't actually in there, that this continues the controversy. It's actually a bit of a fallacy, particularly when you're working directly with families affected by parental alienation. The ICD-11, which is the World Health Organization curation of diseases and mental health problems, will have parental alienation in it. And so there is a move coming in which parental alienation will be very much included in the important catalogue, which really means that the DSM-5 issue becomes less, less difficult to challenge. Many people who are anti-parental alienation will use the DSM-5 as a sort of evidence base for why parental alienation is a crackpot science. And that really leads us down a cul-de-sac. It sort of takes us into a place where we find ourselves having to argue back and forth about it. But the inclusion in the ICD-11 really puts a sort of stamp on the truth of parental alienation, which is that it is recognised. It is very, very damaging to children, and increasingly what we're seeing is that people are recognising not only the label parental alienation, but all of the difficult psychological and mental health issues which affect children who are affected by alienation. People are beginning to recognise the harm that it does.
In your new book, Understanding Parental Alienation, Learning to Cope, Helping to Heal, it's divided into these three sections, understanding, coping, and then healing. Perhaps could you just sum up for us what you understand by the expression parental alienation?
Yeah, parental alienation is the unjustified rejection by a child of a parent that they actually love dearly. It is a predicament that the child finds themselves in because they've been forced into using the coping mechanism of choosing to leave one parent in order to keep the other. So for us, parental alienation is the reaction in the child. It is the behaviours of one parent and the responses of the other. And so it is a family problem which is located in the child and enacted by the child and which has long-term devastating consequences for children if it's not dealt with as early as possible.
Yes, it's an unusual condition, is it? Because I think, as William Burnett noted in the foreword, sometimes you'll find that the parents who've been studying up on this will know more about it than some of the therapists that they're going to see. Is there some sort of something we don't understand as to why parental alienation is not more accepted by the therapists?
Yeah, from my perspective, this is a very, very, very toxic arena to be working in, to be involved in as a parent. And unfortunately, what happens is, rather than people recognising the damage that's been done to children, it actually becomes viewed by the outside world as a he said, she said problem. And so people start to believe that this is just about conflict between parents, and in actual fact, it's not. In this arena, there are some of the most severely personality disordered parents that one can find in any environment. People who are experiencing transgenerational patterns of dysfunctional behaviour which have been normalised. And these people are often extremely high-functioning. So from the outside to the outside world, these people are hugely successful in what they do. They are only dysfunctional in one respect, which is their beliefs about the other parents. And the children who become bound into this encapsulated delusional mindset behave in a particular set of ways which draw the professional's eyes towards the rejected parent. Now, many, many therapists get drawn into the delusional mindset of the family. So parental alienation as an issue is a highly infectious phenomenon. It is a highly infectious dynamic. And it is perpetrated by people who are actually quite scary people. They're very powerful. They have extreme personality profiles. And they're used to manipulation and they're used to managing hidden dynamics, the underlying dynamics of life. You will see sociopaths. You see psychopaths, as well as narcissistically personality disordered parents, people with borderline or unstable personality, histrionic personality disorder. These are very, very tough issues to deal with. Many therapists who venture through this door into this field find themselves drawn into these complex dynamics, and they become almost the lightning rod for the underlying difficulties. And they themselves find that they become attacked. Not only that are they attacked by the alienating parents, but they are attacked in the court process, they are ridiculed, they are rubbished. Outside of the work that they're actually doing, they find themselves in a hostile environment where there's a lot of debate and argument and attack from the professionals. And so many therapists kind of venture in, get bitten, and disappear and never come back again. So in that respect, I think that we see few people who have what Gardner called the sort of tenacity and the strength and the commitment and the determination to do this work, because it is truly a horrifying place to be working in.
And speaking as a person who's had some parental alienation experience, it is such a welcome treat to get to speak to somebody like yourself who actually believes that it's there and is prepared to do something rather than nothing to fix the problem.
Yes. For parents, it's a horrifying place because not only are you losing your children, but you are almost losing your mind as well. And all the time you're being told that it's your responsibility, that you are the person who has caused this. And of course you are fully aware of the dynamic which is going on. But it's almost like drowning in quicksand, I guess, shouting for help, but being told that you're the cause of it. And those therapists who do become alienation aware and who do understand the counterintuitive way of working and have the skills and the guts to go out and keep doing it, we need to support those people, because only by supporting those people will we help the parents who are in this nightmare. It truly is a nightmare that can break the mind. The child's mind has been broken, and the end result of this is often that the rejected parent's mind becomes broken as well. And so for us, building a group of people who can support each other and develop the kind of skill set and the workforce necessary to help families, that's our real aim in the next 5 years or so.
And you're doing a wonderful job. And we're speaking today with Karen Woodall, who is the co-author of Understanding Parental Alienation, Learning to Cope, Helping to Heal. We've been listening to how we can better understand parental alienation. We're going to take a short break now and listen to a song by George Harrison called Give Me Love, in which he says, give me hope, help me cope with this heavy load. And I think that applies in this area of parental alienation. That was Give Me Love by George Harrison, and we're speaking today with Karen Woodall and Nick Woodall on the topic of their new book, Understanding Parental Alienation, Learning to Cope, Helping to Heal. And we're going to speak now with Nick Woodall. Nick, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi, Nick. Yes, we've just been speaking to Karen about your new book. I wonder if you could tell us, she gave us a very good understanding of what parental alienation is, but what do you see as the first signs of parental alienation developing in a child?
Well, sometimes it can be very difficult to spot, I think. It's really a perception issue. We have children who will, over a period of time, struggle increasingly to be able to manage the gap that's opened up between their two parents. And that can be a very slow, incremental route into an alienation reaction. And it can be very, very difficult for a parent to kind of know when this is becoming something serious, and therefore it's difficult for them to intervene. At other times, the dynamic has very often been in place very much under the surface from even before the point at which the family separates. And the point of separation causes the drama, the crisis, if you like, within the family. The signals from the parent that the child becomes aligned to the child that they must subscribe to their worldview, it sort of kicks in very, very powerfully, and the child then immediately goes into an alienation reaction. You know, I think one of the difficult things for parents very often is you know, when you talk to them, they say, well, my relationship with my child was fine, absolutely everything seemed okay, it was a bit difficult every now and then, but largely I didn't see it coming, and then all of a sudden they just never came back. And very often what's going on is that the underlying dynamics that create the alienation reaction are there underneath the surface that emerge at a particular point, usually when there's a crisis in the parent to whom the child becomes aligned to.
Can it sometimes be that the problem arises with one parent and the other parent might be completely blameless in causing this damage to the child with parental alienation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in the pure cases, it really is about one parent. And I think this is one of the difficult things that I think we have structurally in trying to get people to understand the nature of parental alienation, is that I think we're so used to talking about high conflict in families that it's always believed that the child's reaction is a response to conflict between parents, when in actual fact, in the most severe and pure cases of alienation, it is almost always about the personality profile of one parent causing the alienation reaction in the child. Now, that's not to say that in every case of alienation, a parent is deliberately and maliciously telling a child, you must reject a relationship with the other parent. But very often, the important thing that's going on is not what's said by the parent, but the dynamic between them and their child and the unspoken messages, which are far more powerful. You know, I think what we see time and time again is that the child becomes absolutely terrified that unless they do what they believe the parent requires them to do, that parent will then cut off the warm light of their love from them. And so they cling to the parent who they've become aligned to, and they will do whatever they feel they need to do to keep that parent in their life. So if a parent, for example, becomes very, very angry, or a parent becomes very dysfunctional, any of those kinds of things, a parent who cries all of the time, each time a child leaves, then what happens is the child begins to attend to that parent's needs, and the alienation reaction then can kick in very powerfully. And that's just about the behaviours of one parent rather than both.
Now, in the section on coping, you talk about something called a transition bridge. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that.
Sure, yeah. The transition bridge is a metaphor, if you like. It's a way of conceptualising the task that faces children as they go through a family separation. So if we think about attachment, so the theory, attachment is essentially the building of warm and enduring bonds usually between parents and their children. So when children are born, the world is an entirely terrifying place, and infants learn that they will survive because their parents attend to their needs often enough and predictably enough. And when I say attend to their needs, I don't just mean feeding them and keeping them warm and things like that. We're talking much more about holding them when they're in distress, good eye contact, singing to them, all those kinds of things. And the child builds up a kind of a reserve of self-esteem that allows them to go out into the world and into uncertain situations. Now, in normal circumstances, every child will have a unique attachment experience to their mother and their father, but they will also have what we might call a unified attachment experience, so they're attached to the family. And the task that faces all children who go through a family separation is finding a way of maintaining their individual and unique attachment experience to their mother and their father, but now in an entirely fractured world. So So if we can imagine a kind of a crevasse opens up in the child's attachment experience with mum on one side and dad on the other side. Now, the transition bridge is for us is a kind of a way of understanding what the child needs to do to maintain their unique relationships with both of their parents in this fractured world. So when they're with one parent, say they're with their mum, they will feel attached to them, they'll feel warm, they'll feel secure, they'll feel safe. But then to spend time with dad, they have to break their attachment to mum and cross the transition bridge to discover, try and rediscover their attachment to their dad. Once they've found that, they'll feel safe and secure. But then to go to mum, they have to break their attachment to dad and again cross over that transition bridge. Now, ideally, we would want that transition bridge to be nice and wide and brightly lit so that the child can cross that backwards and forwards very easily. And when I say cross the bridge, we're not just talking about the physical here. We're talking much more about the psychological work that the child needs to do to shift between one parent and the other parent. When a child is in a more toxic situation where perhaps mum and dad are arguing, or more problematically where one parent is behaving in such a way that the child begins to feel distress and anxiety, then crossing that bridge becomes much more difficult. The bridge becomes longer, it becomes scattered with debris and barbed wire, and the child struggles to make that psychological transition between mum and dad. When that gets too much for the child, they may begin to partition, which means that they kind of keep the two halves of their lives entirely separate. But when it becomes absolutely acute, the child can no longer find a way to cross that bridge, and instead they split the world in two. And this is the psychological coping mechanism that Karen was talking about earlier. Splitting is a very, very problematic defense mechanism. It's an infantile defense mechanism in which the child begins to conceptualize their life in two different parts. On one side is the embodiment of everything that's good, and on the other side is the embodiment of everything that's evil. And that is the big problem that we're dealing with an alienation reaction in a child.
And some parents will have to accept that they are never likely to see their child again. That must be a dreadful thing to come to terms with.
Well, I think that I'm not sure that's true. I think what experience has taught us, and certainly the research shows, is that in the vast majority of cases, most children will at some point find their way back to the parent that they reject. And in those circumstances, the most important thing for the rejected parent to do is find a way to stay whole and healthy. And when we talk about being whole and healthy, it's not just about sort of hanging on by your fingertips. It's about finding a way to retain the essential you. It's about being whole physically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, any way you like. Because what the child needs is to know that that parent is there for them and that that parent has survived. Because at some point, what happens is that the suppressed attachment experience that the child has bubbles up to the surface and they become aware of the parent that they've rejected again. And as the child gets older, very often what they're looking to do is to try and work out whether or not it's safe to go back to that parent. How will that parent respond to me? Will that parent be angry? Will I have destroyed that parent? Will they be an alcoholic or something like that? And what they need to know is that that parent has survived so that they can hold that suppressed attachment experience in their mind long enough for them to contemplate finding a way back. And I think that our advice always to parents is even when it feels as though there is no hope, there is always hope. And your task then is to protect yourself, is to look after yourself, is to retain the essential you so that when the child does come back, they find the parent that they've lost. It's absolutely critical.
So there are the three important things: the understanding it so you can be alienation aware, the coping, and the healing. And we've been speaking today with Karen Woodall and Nick Woodall. Nick, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you picked and why you picked it?
Yes, we picked a song by an Anglo-French band called Stereolab, who we became aware of in the 90s and in the noughties. They're a band that combined the very best of French pop and German krautrock. And we picked it for no other reason than it was a band that Karen and I used to listen to together quite a lot when we first knew each other. So the track we picked is by a band called Stereo Lab, and the track is called Jenny Angeline.
And that was Jenny Angeline by Stereo Lab, picked today by our special guests Karen Woodall and Nick Woodall. Karen and Nick, it just remains for me now to thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.